Our next topic is marijuana messaging and social media strategies. Kevin Mamalji is going to be the moderator. You can come on up here. Kevin is the National Normal Outreach Director. He's works in the Denver office. He has strong communication skills. He has a background in political consulting and an elaborate background in political action. We're going here. He has strong communication skills. He consistently demonstrates the ability to organize, prioritize, and work under extreme work pressure, heavy workload, and deadlines. Now, that's an ideal, normal employee. Here's Kevin.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate the introduction. I guess that's a big ticket to fill, so I'll continue to try to chip away at that. My name is Kevin Mamalji. I'm the National Outreach Coordinator for Normal. I see a lot of familiar faces and some new ones as well. My primary focus is to support roughly 150 Normal chapters and affiliates around the country as they engage in reform efforts on the local and state level. But I also get to do fun stuff like moderate panels with some of my colleagues. Today we're going to be, this is the last panel, and it's going to be a great one. We have a lot of good speakers. I'll go through a couple introductions real quick. We're going to hear from Laura Judy first. Laura Judy and her husband started with Normal back when the internet was created. She's been with the that's to speak to her experience, let me clarify. She's been with the organization for a long time. She's our webmaster. She's a social media guru and just all things mass communication. She really is our glue. She holds the organization together, the weekly emails that she sends out, Facebook posts, social media, and on and on and on. And then also just maintaining our website. For those of you that have visited normal.org, there's an extensive amount of information, studies, research, and all that stuff, and she's constantly updating it as it comes in her way, so she definitely has a lot on her plate. Next up, we have Chris Thompson. A lot of you probably recognize the name. He served as an intern with me last year in the Denver office, and I can tell you that he's definitely one of the hardest working people in the marijuana movement. Worked with him side by side for about 3 months, assisting our Normal chapters around the country. He has extensive knowledge in social media outreach. He explained the difference between a graphic and a meme, which I thought they were the same thing, but apparently they're not. But he will be speaking about kind of best practices in general. And then, of course, last but not least, Russ Belville. It doesn't really need an introduction. I think most of us are familiar with him. He's done a lot of great work for the movement. He's been in radio, podcast, social media. He's been active in the scene for more than 20 years. Started a podcast with Normal, or he took over a podcast several years ago that was basically a 45-minute podcast. People loved Russ so much they decided to turn it into a two-hour radio show. And then from that, it ended up being like a 24-hour marijuana talk show radio talk show. And then he went on to be the National Outreach Coordinator with Normal, where he helped establish over 70 chapters around the country. So he's done a lot of good work for the movement, and of course he's a rock star on social media. So that being said, I don't believe there's any presentations. These are pros, so they're going to be speaking off the cuff. So I'll just go ahead and pass it over to Laura. Laura does have a presentation.
Yes. This is you, right?
Yes.
Is that your room?
Yeah. Hello. Okay, so thank you for that nice introduction. I want to talk a little bit about what I call is the layering effect. I don't know if that's an actual term or not, but what it means is that people need to see your message in more than one place, more than once, in order to register the message and take action. So you want to mix it up, you want to present your message in different ways, but you want to be consistent about what your message is. So, we've got your website, we've got the blog, which is the news of your message, We have the newsletter, which is a personal message, goes into people's inboxes, and your social media, which is a way to cross-promote. The layering effect can help drive traffic to your website, or it can drive traffic from your website to your social media, or from your email list to your social media, and all around in kind of a layering effect. It's just a way to leverage your traffic. There are some other things that people call it, such as the rule of seven, that you need to, someone needs to see your message seven times before they can register it. Some experts say that three is the magic number, but whether three or seven, the layering effect can definitely come into play. So with social media, so I want to talk to primarily like people who are trying to get their message out there through social media channels or through emailing. And if you have a chapter and you want to, there's so many different kinds of social media. It's sometimes you have to limit yourself depending on your resources and your staff. So you want to look for who you have. If you have someone in your chapter who loves to take pictures and they like social media, maybe Instagram might be something for you. If you, you know, need to kind of like decide out of all the choices, Facebook and Twitter are the kind of the largest, most widely used social media. And the most important thing is that social media trends change very quickly. So it's very important to keep up on the trends and to research it, Google it. If you see a Google article from more than a year or 2 years ago, it's probably outdated. So you want to check the date of when whatever was written if you're trying to figure out the best practices or whatever. On Facebook, you want to set up a Facebook page, not a profile. And that way you can have, you know, your likes, you can look at your insights, what are your stats, you can target your posts to certain member areas of the country or people with certain interests. You can schedule your posts. That helps you, you know, to spread your messages out. And you want to engage your audience. You want it to be a conversation. You're communicating with your audience, and you don't want to just keep broadcasting out. You want to hear what they have to say. So a good thing to try to do is to ask a question when you make a post, and then people will hopefully answer the question. You want to give them a reason to engage. If you are having a Twitter account, and you want to have a lot of different voices on your Twitter, a good thing to do is to retweet. Like, have all of the people who are populating your Twitter account each have their own Twitter accounts, and then the main account can retweet what the other people are saying. And that way you get kind of a sense of, you know, who's into what and what they're trying to promote. You always want to use visuals. I liked what the conversation about what you brought up, Kevin, with the... So we do a lot of images, and we use stock photography. We also use some of the DPA images. There's one there that we modified. We take stock photography, and we put, like, the Canadian flag. So that was, like, two images that we put together. The marijuana bottles with the oil, that was not marijuana oil. It was something else. And I put a different kind of leaf in there. So, you know, it kind of, there's ways that you can take this stuff and... It's very important to use images that you own. You can get them from the public domain. You can use these royalty-free images, which you can purchase. You can take your own pictures, but not everybody's a great photographer, and, you know, the lighting, and you really want it to look nice. So you want to use images that you own, and then if they need to be credited, you know, you can put a little credit. We have some here that were credited. The main thing, one of the main things I do for Norm, I've been joking that I've been sending 15 million listservs a day. I think I might be exaggerating just a little bit, but one of the things I do for Normal is to send out the HTML newsletters, which are the normal news on a weekly basis, plus the legislative alerts. And one of the things that we have found is that, you know, even though emailing can kind of seem old school a little bit, it is really one of the most effective ways to reach the audience. And when done right, it can be very, very effective. Email is much stronger than social media for converting people into members or donors. And it's a personal strategy. So it's receiving an email in your inbox, and it's kind of like, oh, Normal's talking to me, you know. So people are very kind of vested in that. The other thing about the mailing list is that people opt into the mailing list. They volunteer to sign up to receive the mailing list, so they want to get it. But they can also opt out very easily by unsubscribing. So you want to keep your content to be things that they, you know, want to know about. And the content, you don't want to overwhelm them with too much content, but you, we don't really have the problem of not having enough content, but you want to obviously have perhaps a weekly or monthly newsletter that you would do on a regular basis, specific like legislative alerts that are specific to your state or your region are usually what people really want to know about. They want to know what's going on in their area, what they can do to help, what you're doing to help reform marijuana laws. Fundraising is kind of more of a special occasion. You don't want to send out too much fundraising on your listservs because people, you know, they don't really want to see that too often, but they do understand that, you know, you have to make money to provide for the things that you're providing. So maybe an annual drive, a semi-annual. You can obviously talk about your events, parties, other ways for people to get involved. I always like to use a graphic in the newsletters as well, and it kind of comes back to the same thing. It's a visual interest. It gets their attention. You should always make your graphics have a link to the article you're talking about or to your website, because that comes back to the layering effect where you're driving people back to the other regions that you have, the other online regions, where they can see what you're talking about. When you send a newsletter, this is going to sound kind of crazy, but you always want to proofread everything really well. And you don't really want to proofread it yourself. You want to get someone else to proofread it. But if you don't have someone to proofread for you, then you can read it out loud. And that helps to, you know, find those little kind of idiosyncrasies. I kind of talk to myself a lot. I work from my home office and I'm alone there, and be talking to myself, and if somebody happens to come in and, you know, you're talking to yourself, Laura. I say, oh no, I'm proofreading. So, because I'm out reading the things out loud. And then after each mailing, you want to look for the responses. Again, this is engaging with your audience. People are going to write back. They're going to be pissed off about something you said, or they're going to, you know, want to ask a question about, you know, what's going on with a certain bill or whatever. So you want to answer the emails as quickly as possible. You want to unsubscribe anybody who requests to be unsubscribed. If they don't do it automatically, you want to do that right away so that, you know, you can prevent your emailing list from being flagged as spam. And a very important thing for the email is to have the template be a mobile template. A lot of people check their emails now on their mobile devices. People check their email constantly, so you want to have that. We have on the sidebar of the normal newsletter, you can't see the whole thing here, but you can. That's where you can put more of like your fundraising. We have the lobby day. You can have your blog, just other links and things that you want to promote. I'm going to kind of keep this a little shorter than I planned, but I also wanted to say that for any of the normal chapters, the National Normal is willing to help you build your email list, and we are willing to send listservs for you to our subscribers who are in your state. So, and we can do that occasionally when, you know, we're not too backed up with other things that we're sending out. So if any of you have a chapter and you want to find more ways of building that audience, please talk to me later after the panel or tonight at the party. Or you can email me at laura@normal.org. Some of the mailing providers that you're going to use, such as MailChimp or Constant Contact, there's a lot of different ones that have it. Lyris, you know, ReachMe, Salsa Labs has one. They base it on the number of subscribers usually, and sometimes you can get a free package if you have under 2,000 subscribers. But if you have a bigger list, you're going to need to have a little bit of a budget. I want to stress that it is important to try to find that budget for that, because it really does. We have seen how much more people, many more people, will respond to the email over a social media post. Social media and email marketing, they can enhance each other, and cross-promotion is a huge benefit for reaching your audience and getting your message across. We have a sign-up button right on the front page, very easy for people to find that. Lower down below the fold are all of the different social media sites where people can go to our Facebook, go to our Twitter, go to all the other ones that we are using at the moment. The layering effect, it can provide you with a strategy to broadcast your message to the widest possible audience. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura. I appreciate it. And just so you guys know, it would be really helpful. Laura has communicated this to me before, but when you're out tabling with your local chapter, consider adding a box on that on your sign-up sheet. A lot of us, of course, probably have our volunteer sign-up sheets on the table. Add a little box for the national email list, so whenever you're talking to these folks, they have the opportunity to check that box. And then you could send it to the national office, and we could add them to our national list. So just keep that in mind. It keeps people engaged. We send out the federal alerts and stuff like that, so just keep that in mind. Thank you very much, Laura. Next up, we're going to hear from Chris Thompson. Do you want to just do it from here, or you could have to do it while you're seated?
Sure.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I'll try to keep it short. I know it's been a long day of a lot of speakers, so I'll keep it short and sweet. My kind of little presentation is over how to reach millennials in 10 easy steps on social media, given by a millennial. So it's just 10 easy things that you can do, or at least think about, to help reach millennials on social media. The first one is be honest and be transparent. These are kids who grew up in the majority of their lives were under the Bush administration. We're sick and tired of being fucking lied to. So please be very open, be open and adamant about what you're doing. The second thing you can do is care about reviews. This doesn't mean the guy who's claiming George Washington faked the moon landing, not those kind of reviews, but people who have legitimate concerns on your Facebook page, Twitter page, whatever it is, actually taking the time to respond to those comments and try and fix those problems can go a big way in showing that you're active on those sites. Number three, this is an important one, don't try to be cool. Don't try too hard to be cool because it has the opposite effect. Has anyone seen the video of Hillary Clinton trying to do the nay-nay on Ellen DeGeneres? That's what happens. It'd be about the same effect if I tried to do the nay-nay as a skinny white kid. So some people say, okay, if we're not trying to be cool, then what are we doing on social media? And that goes in number four, which is you have to care and stand for something. And as everyone in this room, we don't really have a problem with that. But being genuine about what you care about and being passionate about that really attracts millennials, I think. Number five is don't be a robot on social media. Don't just have a copy-paste thing that you just go through and do. Be a person. Be an active voice on social media because people buy from people. People listen to people. People don't listen to robots. So you have to kind of have that active personal voice on there. Number six is try to have snackable content as well as, you know, your long-form articles or longer whatever it is. Try to have short, sweet, snackable content that people can read in a line, on the bus, waiting for a taxi, in a taxi, that kind of thing. And that can be short articles, short commentary, whatever it is. Also, video content is really, really, really important. The top 10 YouTube channels all have more than 12 million subscribers. 12 million people get automatically notified when they put out content. And they, you know, we still have the television companies talking about, or the television channels talking about, a few hundred thousand people watch their channel. 12 million are online watching. So it's kind of the future of getting the word out there. If your chapter or your business or whatever it is doesn't have a YouTube channel yet, I would absolutely recommend getting one. It doesn't have to be multi-million dollar production value. Even if you just start with a cell phone video and work your way up from there, starting is the most important thing. Number eight is kind of along the lines of what Laura said as well, being timely and relevant. Hashtags and trends come and go really, really fast, especially with holidays and different special events like that. Capturing those trends and capturing those time points can be really, really important to attracting those. Number nine, exist on multiple platforms. Not so you're attracting the same people on multiple platforms, although that's important, is getting the people who only use a specific platform. So you've got, and also getting on new platforms. Has anyone here had Periscope or been looking at Periscope at all? It's a live streaming video app. I definitely recommend looking at that one. but just looking and engaging in new social media, especially grassroots for people in our industry and cause. And the last thing is kind of help with all of these things and kind of help with your local chapter movements as well. One of the best ways to involve people and the best ways to reach millennials is to use a millennial as your social media person. It's a great way to get college students or even mature high school students involved as long as you have set guidelines. And eventually you start seeing, I've seen it in Indiana with people we've worked for and putting them on social media. Once they start, they're posting these articles, they're posting these information. Once they start posting that, those people who are working those social media channels are learning that information. They start reading those articles. You'll find that that college kid who is posting to your Twitter account, posting to your Facebook account, slowly turns into one of your wonkiest people because he's been reading those articles as he's been posting them. So that's a good way to get involved as well. So just 10 short things you can do to help get millennials on your social media channels. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chris. Definitely short and sweet. I think everybody enjoyed the information, especially coming from a millennial. Next up, we have Russ Belville, who, of course, many of you know. Excellent speaker on both messaging and social media. Long history in podcasts, and I think that's going to be kind of the topic of his presentation. And as soon as we wrap up, we'll be heading over to the O Street Mansion for some social time. So I'll go ahead and pass it over to Russ.
Thank you, Kevin. So, my name is Russ Belville. I'm known as Radical Russ Online on everything. Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Pinterest, SoundCloud, YouTube. Hell, I'll sign up for a Grindr account just to have the name, okay? Just so no one else gets it, I can imagine. But today I'm going to talk mostly about podcasting. And let's start first with defining the term, what that is, because some people may not have any idea what I'm talking about, but basically podcasting is kind of a message in a bottle. It's you recording your voice for however long and putting it out on a file that gets sent out. And that file that gets sent out is subscribed to by people using iTunes or iHeartRadio, or there's a number of different platforms for this, but the short and sweet of it is it's like a little radio show that people get on demand automatically. And my show is kind of an outlier, doing a two-hour live talk radio program. I come from professional radio, so it wasn't a thing for me, but for a lot of people, 2 hours would be way too long for a podcast. Usually podcasts, 15 minutes, half hour, hour at max. So why do one? Why have a podcast? What good is that for a normal chapter? Because if you look at all the different things that we've talked about so far, websites, well, you can have your normal chapter website and get a ton of facts up there. Stats and studies and charts and information and links to other websites that have even more information. There's a wealth of information out there. And sure, of course, you should do that. But one way in which podcasting excels over these other types of methods of getting our message out there is it humanizes it. When I'm doing my podcast, I can do things with my voice that can heighten tension, make you pay close attention, or get you outraged. Can't really do that unless you're an exceptional writer, and plenty of people are, but there's things you can do with the human voice that are going to endear you and going to create a human quality to this message. And the other thing about it is something that's true about talk radio in general, and that is it's the most intimate form of mass communication out there. People that are looking at websites, they got that screen open, they got their phone open, they got the TV going in the background. People that make YouTube videos, and I got nothing against that, I did it for a long time, but on a YouTube video, I gotta watch the YouTube video. When people are listening to my podcast, these are guys that have earbuds on while they're trimming in Colorado. It's a circuit court judge in Denton, Texas, who listens to my podcast on his commute back and forth in the middle of Texas. It's people that have been incarcerated that have listened to me that get some sort of hope. And that to me is the most important part of podcasting, is that it does create that human element, that human connection. I've been doing this now since 2008. I came from XM Satellite. I had a show from 2006 to 2009. Took over the normal podcast from Chris Goldstein in 2008. Did 908 episodes of that. Then took it independent, and I've done 785 episodes since. And over this time, and over this collection of over about 3,500 hours worth of podcasting, I've developed relationships with these listeners. I've got an RIP page of listeners who've died over the past 8 years, where their families will send me notes in email. It breaks me up even thinking about it. Send me notes in email telling how important it was to get that daily feed, to get that confirmation that they weren't insane. And that's something that I bring to this too, is that, you know, I grew up in Nampa, Idaho, which is in the conservative county in Idaho, which is kind of like the sauna in hell. It's a little redundant, right? And I always felt like an outlier, a black sheep in Idaho, because, you know, I thought, you know, radical things like, I don't know, being gay was like being left-handed. That was as inconsequential to me. Or that, you know, everybody deserved equal pay. Or that, you know, I had these crazy ideas like weed should be legalized. And growing up in Nampa, Idaho, you couldn't express that. You couldn't say that out loud, maybe amongst your friends, but not, you know. I remember being in jobs where somebody would make some joke. Paul Armentano mentioned the pop pun headlines that'll come up, right? Someone would be reading a story at work about some loser went up in smoke or whatever. And having to watch yourself, like, okay, laugh at this, but do not laugh too hard at this, right? Don't let them know that I know what the joke is too well, right? And so when you're coming up in that kind of atmosphere, you're just so desperate to believe that you're not crazy and to believe that there's others out there that feel like you. And I get a lot of my listeners not necessarily from California, Oregon, those states. I get them from Texas and Florida and Georgia and Arkansas and Tennessee and these places where people are just desperate to have some sort of connection. And so that's what a podcast can do for you. As a local normal chapter, it can give a personality and a voice to the message you're getting out there that doesn't come off on the printed page, that doesn't come off, and you can do it through video, but you're asking people to dedicate themselves to video. With the podcast, it can be on the go, while they're driving, while they're working, while they're doing something else. And that's why I think it can be a really critical piece of your messaging strategy. And another great thing about it, it's cheap and easy. If you have a laptop, you have everything you need right now to make a podcast. Most laptops these days have a built-in little mic. It's not a very good mic. You should probably buy a better one. But if you want to get started, you can do it with that. You can do it with a cell phone now. Most cell phones have voice recorder function on it. You can just voice record on that. And with the podcast, mine has a lot of production value. I've got openers and music and themes and commercials and stuff, but it doesn't have to be that complex. Again, it can be a 15-minute This Week in Houston Normal, This Week in Cleveland Normal, This Week in Maryland Normal, or wherever you're at. And so people get that voice coming to them every day, and they can get used to it, and they can feel that, hey, it's not a bunch of lawyers in a mansion or something. This normal chapter is real people that are like me, that talk like me, that think like me. That's where podcasting can have a great deal of impact, I think. And the how of it isn't so tough. The software you need to be able to create podcasts and edit them is free on the internet. It's called Audacity, A-U-D-A-C-I-T-Y. Audacity is a free open source program you can get for editing audio, recording audio. It's free to post your stuff to iTunes. It's free to submit it to these different areas. On your, you can integrate your podcast as part of your normal chapter's website as well. If you're running a website based on the WordPress platform, which is a very popular blogging platform, there are plugins, little attachments to that program you can use that will make your podcast as easy to upload as your blog posts. And that's what I was doing on my site for a long time. Also, by doing it as in conjunction with your blog, people that subscribe to your blog also get the notices of your podcast and kind of vice versa. So there's an integrative factor there. You may have to pay the costs of storage for the files themselves, but you can. There's other sites. SoundCloud is one to take a look at, soundcloud.com, that has some ability to post some audio on it. And pretty much, I guess the only other thing that I can say about doing the podcasting is the number one thing, I think, is the consistency of it. Make sure that you're consistent about putting out this content. If you say you're going to do a weekly podcast, make sure there's a weekly podcast, because the minute you drop off one or two of those, people think, oh, they quit doing the podcasting, and they drop off listening or cancel their subscription. So be consistent about it, and also decide what type of podcast it is. Some podcasts are like I kind of mentioned, This Week in Maryland Normal. It's a weekly update of what we're doing. Others may be like a, you could think of them as a mini series. Like I consulted with a guy who was doing, he was with a law firm, and he just wanted to make 8 episodes for cannabis consumers to know their basic rights in a police encounter. And once you had those 8 episodes, there wasn't anything else to podcast on. So that was it. He just wanted to have a pack of 8 episodes. But decide what you want it to be, a continuing series or a particular focus on a subject. And if you have any questions or need some help with it, I will help any normal activist in the country do this absolutely free. I will be your tutor, your question and answer guy, however I can help. Like I said, I'm Radical Russ everywhere. That includes Gmail, radicalruss@gmail.com. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Russ. I appreciate it. And I think Denver Normal will be taking you up on the offer to get a podcast going. So we do, we wrapped up a little bit early. We do have time for maybe 1 or 2 questions for this panel, and then I'll pass the mic over. Does anybody have any questions? Yes.
What trends have you guys seen as far as getting activists or enthusiasts to move from social media, from behind social media walls and
One cool trend is we have our own social media. Facebook's been shutting down. There we go. Facebook's been shutting down people's accounts, and Instagram's been shutting down people's accounts. Now we have Massroots that's doing quite well. So that's part of it. I think that's a natural development because, some people's moms and coworkers are on Facebook, and they may not want to be so out and proud on their Facebook, but now they got a separate place they can go to. That's one trend I've noticed.
Were you meaning out about cannabis or coming out to like physical events or getting into
activism? Right, coming out, moving from offline and into the real world, going to attending events, yeah. Going to rallies, actually being active in the community and not just behind all the Facebook groups.
I think one of the things I've used is, again, like I said in the short presentation, the very active voice. It's easier to come out and do something when someone you consider a friend on the social media platform is asking you to do it, rather than this nameless, faceless organization saying, hey, come out and do work for us. If it's someone you recognize, like Russ said, someone who you're personable, you can come out. I think that helps a lot when it's a friend asking you rather than just some faceless.
Anybody else? We have time for maybe 1 or 2 more questions, and then we'll wrap up. Anybody else? Yes.
For a community who's lost hope, how do you inspire it? Especially for those who have no new economic opportunities and are so deeply entrenched in poverty that they tend to do heroin. Such an idea, because it seems like you have a natural charisma that you're able to reach out to people. My organization and I recently had a difficulty reaching out to the healthcare workers who have been laid off who are currently residing on government welfare within a very bleak scene of economic activity.
Well, that's a big one. In 30 seconds. Describe the universe. Give 3 examples. No. I think part of it is just being out there and providing, I don't know, an example or hope that just being a beacon of hope. I mean, one of the things that happens with my show is I get a lot of people that follow me, and I think they're living vicariously through me when they get to see the Instagram photos of, the great parties that we have, or if I'm at the Capitol in a very progressive state and they're passing some legislation, that they can feel that even if I'm in, West Texas and nothing's moving, at least it's moving somewhere. And the more that they can feel as part of a community, because I think what happens, again, is that being in the closet and being isolated makes you feel like it's never going to get any better. And that's why I really like the podcasting angle, is to get that sense of community and family built up. Besides that, Inspiring hope, boy. That's about the best I can do for now.
I think you also want to use the caring voice, kind of what you were talking about, Russ. You know, just be when people are giving their... Is this on?
Yes.
Just use the caring voice, you know, and just be as warm and welcoming and from all the different angles that you can, and hope that you reach someone. And if they come to your event, like what Christine was asking about, that's another way to, you know, reach out to them and be there. It's, you know, it's, there's not really an easy answer for that, but just keep working at it. Normal's been working at it for a really long time, and we just keep working at it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Let's give these guys a round of applause.
I want to thank